It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Wes is on the road today. Cecil Harvell is with us in the studio. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
We're doing well. What are we talking about today?
Ben, let's talk today about third-party refusals to accept a power of attorney under this new North Carolina Uniform Power of Attorney Act.
You've told us at the beginning in January went into effect that
January 1, 2018 code. Yep. And part of that statute, section 120 of that statute talks about, well, what do you do when a third party, what are your options, what are your remedies when a third party refuses to accept the power of attorney?
Mm-hmm.
So let's set this up a bit. Mary signs a power of attorney appointing her son. Frank is her agent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She authorizes him to act on her behalf. The power of attorney is acknowledged by a notary public, and it states that her son has the authority to act. Many months later, Mary suffers a massive stroke, and Frank takes the power of attorney, if you will, to the banking institution and attempts to withdraw money from Mary's checking account to pay bills or to otherwise act on her behalf. The bank at that point, or it could be a stock company, or an umbrella stock company where assets happen to be held, money market accounts, mutual funds, whatever the case might be.
Right.
They, of course, at that point say, well, you know, Mr. Frank, we are not going to honor your power of attorney, or we have some questions about your power of attorney. Well, this, as we can imagine, Ben, has been a course of facts that has occurred for years and years and years and years in the state of North Carolina. And so the North Carolina legislature has now tried to address these facts. What are the grounds where an institution, banking institution, stock institution, can refuse to accept a power of attorney? And what are the parameters of that refusal? And so that's what this statute now addresses, section 120 of the statute, and let's talk about some of the things that it happens to say. First of all, it establishes a timeline for the acceptance of the power of attorney. The statute also lists the legitimate grounds for refusing to accept a power of attorney. And the statute outlines sanctions for refusing on an illegitimate ground to accept the power of attorney, including, I might add, cost and attorney fees.
Okay, so.
Which, let's just stop right there a minute, Ben.
Right.
You know, we've talked, Wes and I have talked on the program for years about the fact that in North Carolina, even if you prevail, you don't usually get your attorney fees. Attorney fees are one of these things that each party has to bear, the right and the left. They have to bear their attorney fees, and someone might prevail in the case, but you had to pay your own freight to get there.
Right.
Not in this statute. The statute now says, not in this context. Now the statute actually sets forth that if the institution, on illegitimate grounds, refuses to accept the power of attorney, and the agent has to go to court in order to have the power of attorney enforced, that then the attorney fees are going to be taxed to the institution.
Was there an issue that was it arising a lot in the states where where it was not being honored?
Oh yes,
really?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, and so now there have to be explicit reasons.
And there were not the there was not the specificity of these things that I'm speaking of, you know, the establishment of a timeline. I mean, people, for instance, Ben, would present their power of attorney to the bank or the stock company. Well, we'll talk to you next week. And next week would come, well, Mr. Jones or Mr. Frank, come on back the following week. And 2 or 3 or 4 weeks would go by before they would finally give the word to the Frank that, by the way, we're accepting or we're denying the power of attorney. So, of course, now there is a timeline.
Okay.
And there certainly is this heavy club out there waiting, you know, in left field to hammer the institution for attorney fees, I might add, and cost if they illegitimately refuse to accept the power of attorney. These are some very new add-ons, if you will, to the law, and they're statutory.
You know, we talk about the law becoming increasingly complex. And one of those areas, I would imagine, is that say you've grown up in a town, you've done your work at a particular institution for decades. And then you walk in and say, I have my mom's power of attorney. Most likely you would expect them to just take that as a matter of fact. But now they want to very carefully read it because of this new statute.
They can carefully read it. But as I'm about to say, they've got 7 business days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
After 7 business days, they're going to have to be finished with their reading.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to render to the Frank, if you will, to Mr. Frank, that they either accept the power of attorney, that they refuse to accept it and based on an outlined statutory ground, or they request a certification or opinion of counsel.
Mm-hmm.
So within 7 business days after Frank takes the power of attorney in for his mother, Mary, the bank or the stock company, I keep saying that, the annuity,
right, sure.
It can be any place where there happen to be monies,
annuity,
IRA, CD, stocks, mutual funds,
long-term
bank
care
accounts.
Insurance. Yeah,
yes. Okay. Yeah. This act would apply to any of those kinds of institutions that are holding the asset of Mary, no matter what type of asset it happens to be. It doesn't singularly, if you will, Ben, just apply to banks. And I need to make that real clear.
But using that as an example, though, what are some of the legitimate
issues? On a practical basis again, my experience as a practicing lawyer is that the banks are pretty good with powers of attorney.
Yeah,
many times is the stock companies or the annuity companies, the life insurance companies, the companies that are not local in nature, if you will, that are receiving a power of attorney and, of course, you know, throw their hands up and don't quite know what to do about
it.
Now, of course, you know, they've got 7 business days to consult with their lawyers and come to a decision as to whether or not they're going to accept the power of attorney. As one can imagine, this again, and I'm repeating myself, Ben, but, you know, a power of attorney would be sent to, you know, wherever, a Fidelity, a Smith Barney, a New York Life, or whatever.
A mortgage institution.
And weeks and weeks and weeks would go by before Mr. Frank would receive a decision about needing to get some money out of that account for his mother, Mary. They now have 7 business days to respond.
Okay.
And again, after the 7 business days, they either accept the power of attorney, they refuse to accept it on a statutory ground, which we're going to go through those, or they request a certification or opinion of their counsel.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with some of those reasons why they might or might not accept the power of attorney. But if you have a question on a legal matter, you can call us right now at these numbers.
800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
Welcome back to the program here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Let's Talk Legal, and Cecil Harvell from Harvell & Collins with us today. And we have Earlene from Pine Knoll Shores with a question for us. Hi, Earlene. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
And how can we help you out today?
Well, with my bank, I have a POD, payable on death, for my niece. Will that affect my power of attorney?
No, ma'am.
Hold on 1 second. I didn't have your mic up. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, ma'am. Good question, but they're entirely distinct. A POD or payable on death, sometimes it's referred to as time on death. This is a registration or contract that you have made with your bank that says, as of course I know you know, Arlene, that says that upon your death, that account is to pay directly to your particular beneficiary. That is a different issue than a power of attorney. A power of attorney is about what happens to your account and who has control of your account while you are living. Only while you are living. Once we die, the power of attorney has no more validity, and your POD or TOD at that point would take place.
Now, Arlene, the follow-up question might be, do you want your niece to help you out with bills? Should you not be able to do that?
No, I have the money.
Okay.
Yeah, but do you have a power of attorney to allow her access to your money while you're living?
Well, I don't know about that. I guess why couldn't she use a power of attorney right now?
If you have one.
Oh, I have one.
Okay. Well, then please don't confuse a power of attorney with a POD. That was the beginning of your question, because the two are very different.
Yeah.
A POD is an apple and a power of attorney is an orange. So a power of attorney is a legal document that you have had drawn up probably by a lawyer that says that you grant to your niece particularly, or whoever in your family, the right to be able to access your monies while you're living. Okay? Your POD is about what happens to your money when we are no longer living. The two are very different.
Oh, I guess I have to come in and see you, Cecil.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Either that or call me, and your voice sounds very familiar. We might have a file for you, I think.
You do.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. I thought we did because you have a beautiful voice. Listen, Arlene, you call me and I'll look at your file. I'm sure that you probably do have one now that we've confirmed that you are who you are. We probably wouldn't let you get out the door without a power of attorney.
All right. Thank you, Arlene.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
But it brings up a great question. Because there are those kind of systematic things are often confused and abused.
Well, they are. I mean, Arlene's question is exactly a tip of, yeah, I mean, I'm so glad she called in. That's a classic question that we would get. And my gosh, how confusing can it be any more confusing? POD,
yeah, right.
POA,
right.
TOD. I mean, come on. You know, it's confusing.
LOL.
So the good thing, what's good here is that she's asking the question.
Yes.
And this is what I encourage our other listeners to do, is to ask the question. I mean, Arlene, you know, we'll pull her file.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably do that when I get in the office and probably give her a call. But I'm sure that she has a power of attorney.
Right.
And then, you know, that her question has been answered.
Right. And the payable on death questions we can save for another time. But we have these issues here with a power of attorney being refused. What are some of those?
All right. Well, let's talk on here about, there's a lot to cover here. The sanctions for refusing to accept a power of attorney in violation of this statute are the following, Ben. First of all, there could be a court order mandating the acceptance of the power of attorney.
Right.
There could be liability for attorney fees and cost in that proceeding, as we just discussed a few minutes ago. And lastly, this is an interesting one, any other remedy available under North Carolina law.
Hmm.
So in other words, let's say that there are consequences.
Right.
As a result of the bank and or, as I've said many times, other financial institution not accepting the power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And not being forthwith with the funds that Frank is asking for on behalf of his mother.
Yeah, imagine and if then, there was a foreclosure.
And if there's a consequence as a result of that, then then if that's a foreseeable consequence, then as we can imagine, the institution could be liable for those damages as well.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a, very, very, interesting is that, we have taken these steps because of obviously of past abuses. Now, what are some of the legitimate reasons they might excuse?
Right. Well, there are quite a few of them as we would expect. And we may roll over into next week a little bit, and then I'm going to begin to go through the legitimate grounds for an institution to refuse to honor a power of attorney. And then lastly is this expedited procedure under the law to get the power of attorney either enforced or legitimately denied.
Right.
Okay. The legislature has gone so far as to set forth in the statute an expedited procedure, such as we have under guardianship law, where we need an interim guardian and other areas of the law where there can sometimes be a time element, time sensitivity. So the law acknowledges that the refusal to find out whether the power of attorney is legitimate or illegitimate is a time sensitive decision.
Okay. Excellent.
Okay. Now, let's go through some of the reasons. Well, one of the reasons is that the institution has actual knowledge of the termination of the agent's authority.
Okay. All right. In other words, they're fraudulently presenting it.
Maybe they've been told by some other member of the family, well, you might as well expect Frank to come by here, but I'm Frank's sister and I'm telling you that the power of attorney has been changed. It's been revoked.
Okay.
He doesn't have the authority anymore. Okay.
And she can show a more recent power of attorney that will overturn it. Okay.
Correct. Or something of that nature. Just that they have actual knowledge of the fact that there's been a termination. Okay. The agent is requesting to, for instance, make a loan to the principal. That is an area that can be questioned for the agent to ask an institution to make a loan when in fact there's no prior relationship with that particular institution.
And there you have the case where you would have what they can do is they could call on another opinion and might have to seek another legal opinion on that.
Okay. When the agent has previously breached an agreement with the institution.
Okay. So they have history.
Okay. And the institution is aware of the fact that the agent has in times past, breached a fiduciary duty. The institution in good faith, whatever that means, which would have to be litigated, just believes that the power of attorney is not valid and that the agent does not have the authority to perform the act requested. So again, this goes to the specificity in the power of attorney.
Yeah. In other words, has it been triggered? I mean, does it?
You know, does the power of attorney have the specific language in it, you know, to liquidate, you know, $250,000 of stock?
Or what about, you know, Frank's mom was just in the bank that morning and she was conducting business and everything seemed to be fine. How is it that you have power of attorney in effect now? You know, that might be a legitimate question.
Yes. Yeah. I think that what we begin to see in the statute is in defense for the, in legitimate grounds and in defense of the institutions is, you know, kind of what we lawyers would call a look at the totality of the circumstances.
Right.
I mean, you know, are there some, you know, is it the caregiver that is in the bank making a transaction? And what is the nature of the transaction? Is it really for the benefit of the principal? Or are they asking for money to be wired to some institution that they're not even aware of, you know, how that institution relates to the principal? Just yesterday in our office, we were wiring money, a fairly significant amount of money on behalf of a client. and the bank wanted verbal authorization from one of the partners at the law firm, myself or Wes, that the wire was legitimate.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll have more to come in just a moment with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins at 800-818-2255 to ask your question. And here we are looking at questions of power of attorney and also sanctions that are possible against an institution and how they might actually refuse on legitimate grounds according to new statutes out there.
Right. Okay. Now, Ben, we talked about before that that if for some reason the bank can, or institution,
right,
financial institution, cannot set forth one of these legitimate grounds within the 7 business day timeline, then at that point they could be liable,
right,
for cost and attorney fees when the client is then forced to challenge them on this decision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So many times with the power of attorney, the reason someone has it is because time is of the essence. I mean, they need to have certain things happen.
Correct.
And on behalf of the person they're acting in as
correct
attorney in fact.
Just like right now, we would have folks that were needing to access money in order to pay taxes by April the 15th.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not paid by April the 15th, there can be penalties and interest, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's the necessity that a mortgage and or an equity line be paid off.
Right.
And of course, interest is going to continue to accrue until such time as it is paid off. Sometimes insurances will collapse,
mm-hmm,
will be no longer in effect, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
On the home, on the car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these are critically important insurance policies, and many times in an elderly context, they've collapsed.
Hmm.
I mean, they're no longer in effect, and the elder person is driving the car without knowing that the insurance has lapsed.
Yeah.
This is a real problem. Hmm. The insurance on the house, the fire, the casualty has lapsed, and now, of course, in is coming the hurricane. Okay, so absolutely, Ben, you're correct. There are time-sensitive deadlines that are needed, and therefore, if an agent under a power of attorney is needing to get to funds in order to pay these things,
mm-hmm,
then, of course, there is now this heightened pressure on the financial institution to comply.
Yes, and as we said in the answer to the previous question there, too, this is all happening as the person is still alive, but they just may not be capable of making these decisions on
that,
their
own. That is exactly true. That is usually the case.
Mm-hmm.
Diminished capacity. They may be, mm-hmm, you know, generally okay, still being able to make their cup of coffee in the morning, but they aren't maintaining all of their bills. They're misunderstanding the bills that come.
Mm-hmm.
The bills are in a stack with lots of other kind of, junk mail, and the car insurance or the house insurance now, mm-hmm, has lapsed as a result of that.
All right. If you want to find out more about this and other matters of your civil legal life, you can give a call to the folks at Harvell and Collins for the right advice at the right time at 252-726-9050 and 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City and online at harvellandcollins.com.